most look forward to and what would Cuba most need if the blockade was lifted today? Also related to this is, in the negotiations, how are you dealing with the demand that businesses appropriated by the revolution be compensated? What has the role of the Pope been in the negotiations? And finally, how are you preparing for the capitalist tsunami? What will you do to stop the worst of U.S. culture from invading?
La preguntita para que a los dos las tengan la mano.
Bueno, papá.
¿Las quieres aquí?
Sí, papá.
The North American Capitalist Tsunami. Aren't you part of that tsunami? If it is the tsunami, we are very happy.
That's the best climate change.
La desnegociación aquí está.
Well, the Pope role was very important, that was recognized by both President Obama and President Raúl Castro. The, just one point. In the negotiations, how are you dealing with the demand that business expropriated by the revolution be compensated? Well, that's probably one of the most important pending issues. Which, imagine, we have to go back to 1959 when the agrarian reform law was adopted. In that law, it is recognized the right of the former owners of the land to be compensated, and the law describe how they would be paid. That had to do with our sugar exports, because at that time Cuba depended almost completely on sugar trade. And we paid back to a number of people, Cuban landowners, former landowners, some foreign companies, not many because the majority were Americans, but the Americans didn't accept the terms of our law, or more than that, the Eisenhower administration first reduced and then eliminated completely our sugar exports to the U.S. market. Then it was no way to compensate those former owners. I had met several times during my stay in New York with those people who were expropriated in Cuba by the different laws of the revolution. They even had, I don't know if it is still around, if it exists now, there was a joint Cuban Claims Corporate Committee, which ironically were among the very few representatives of the establishment with whom I had regular contacts and relations. It was funny because I remember one gentleman who used to be a big landowner in Cuba, who used to be involved in sugar production, and he told me, listen, I don't want my land back or my sugar mill back because we are not anymore in the sugar business. I really don't want to anything back to me. But I know that not far from my former lands, you are developing very interesting tourist projects. That gentleman represented a U.S. company, very powerful, who was the main owner of practically the Camagüey province before the revolution. And on the shores of Camagüey, there are a number of keys where now we have developed one of the most important touristic poles of Cuba in those keys. So now I am in the tourist business. I would be interested in participate in those projects, but I cannot because my government do not permit me to do that. Why? Because as a condition, first you have to give me back my sugar land. That's an absolutely nonsensical situation. It is a story that began more than 50 years ago. Of course, talking about claims and compensation, you could imagine that we also have our own claims. If the embargo is illegal, as was defined time and again by the UN, if it was not the right policy, as was recognized by the president of the United States itself. Well, what about the consequences? The suffering of millions of Cubans who have lived their entire life under the conditions imposed by the embargo. Of course, we have a lot of claims which are much, much larger than those by the original companies expropriated in Cuba after the revolution. But those are issues that could be discussed bilaterally between two governments that had, when they have diplomatic relations. That's an example. But it will probably take a lot of time. Without finding a resolution, you will need a lot of imagination to be very creative to approach that issue. We never denied the right of the former owners to be compensated. That is in our law. But that was the law that the U.S. decided not to accept, as if the U.S. was a super parliament who could decide of how the Cubans could behave. The tsunami. The tsunami, that's a very good expression. I hope that would happen. But capitalist tsunami is one thing. Tsunami of visitors, people coming with their views, of course, we will welcome that, but I think that we should not be afraid of now in this new phase of our history, beginning to deal with capitalism. When the Americans return to Cuba, they will not be like Columbus discovering Cuba. And when they come to Cuba, the Cubans will not be like those Indians who for the first time saw the image of a European. No, no. The Americans may come to Cuba and may try to find some space, some room in what has been for many years a field in which other companies had been working for many years. Cubans discovered the North American visitors and are accustomed to deal with them because Canada is also part of North America, and Canadians are number one in number of visitors to Cuba. But that has been so for decades. Then the Cubans will not discover now how a North American look alike, or how they are other, more or less like the Canadians. Before the revolution, tourists played an important role, especially in Havana, associated with gambling and other things that at that time. But if you go to the facts, we didn't get 3 million tourists as we did last year. No, in those days, the statistics referred to hundreds of thousands of visitors, mostly Americans, and mostly in Havana. Now we get 10 times that figure, mostly from capitalist countries. Canada first, then England, Germany, Italy, some numbers from Mexico, Argentina, other countries in Latin America. And I think that of course, that would exercise an influence in the Cuban society. First of all, economically, it is not just the government or the state who get benefit from that presence. Some of them will be lodged in hotels that belong to the state, but many more others will be at private homes. The last week I saw on Cuban TV, I don't know if you saw it, Kenny, they were talking about tourists in the Santi Espiritu province,
yes.
Particularly in the Trinidad.
Yes.
An old colonial town that is a very important political attraction, a touristic attraction.
Yes.
And they interview the official who is responsible for tourists in that area. And he said that they get a number of tourists, visitors, that are living at private homes. The number of those living at private homes in Trinidad is several times higher than the number that they are lodging in their hotels. Then, practically speaking, the entire city, the entire population,
in Viñales also.
Viñales. It's not far from here. You can go there and you will see that. The entire local town is benefiting and living out of those visitors. And that it won't be something really new. Some friends abroad and also here may be concerned about the effects in terms of the ideology, the culture of such an influence. But again, it won't be a new thing now. For many reasons, American culture has been very much present in our society. Well, culture with capital C, but also the products of the so-called cultural industry, music, video games, all that, they are very much around in Cuba before the Americans come. Probably, well, I had that experience because I live in New York for many years, and I can tell you that for a person in Havana or in Cuba, it was completely normal to be watching an American film at the same time that a New Yorker was doing. Among other things, because not having relations and not having this confrontational course, not being able to export to the US and to be paid for our export, well, we also take from the air some products and use here. That may be an area of a very interesting discussion. If we have normal relation, then you have the copyright aspect involved, we may probably lose it was better when you simply didn't recognize any copyright, and you could see in at a movie theater or at our TV more or less at the same time that you could do in New York.
Yeah.
I think that of course to develop a kind of society like the one we would like to have in Cuba, a kind of socialist society, meaning a society based in human solidarity, equality, and so on, in a world where that kind of society is not in fashion now, of course, poses very serious challenges. You have two options. One is to move to another planet and have that kind of society. The other is to try to be here, to remain here, and not at any particular location. Not in Asia, not in the Far East, but just across the Florida Strait. And that's a challenge. But I think it's also both ways. I wonder why, if that tsunami could be so important in changing the Cuban society, why for half a century every administration in Washington had done everything precisely not to have that possibility existing and appearing. And I humbly believe that they know that human contacts and is always a bilateral thing, that some visitors may find some interesting things in Cuban reality or in Cuban example. Many more would realize that the policy that we're following regarding Cuba was wrong, that they, after all, we were not that such a bad people and as were presented by some media in your country. But it won't be a completely new situation. Something that is very, very important to take into account: the day we don't have an economic embargo, the day Americans could invest in Cuba and have economic, commercial exchanges with Cuba and so on, it won't be as it was before the revolution. The Americans' investors will come as the Canadians, the British, the Germans, the Spanish do. Cuba is not open for sale. You cannot invest where you were. If you want to invest, you have to get the approval of the government. They will tell you yes or no. By the way, this notion of countries for sale where any foreigner could come and buy anything was very much in fashion some decades ago, when the neoliberal philosophy triumphed in Latin America, or was imposed in Latin America. But those days have been overcome years ago. Our policy regarding foreign investment is shared by the majority of the Latin American and Caribbean countries now. It's nothing new. Then an American investor, potential investor, will be like a Canadian investor. They have to go to the government to get or not get the permission, the condition of how to do it. Well, that's I don't know if U.S. culture is necessarily something that you would have to protect against.
Depends in what culture are you talking about.
It depends. I don't think that if Cubans, more Cubans were able to speak American English and communicate with the American, what's wrong with that? Jose Marti did that, and he part of his life, he made his living by translating U.S. literature to Spanish and the other way. I don't see a real problem with that. The fundamental point, the key question is, in the economic area, not to be misled with the idea that Cuba will be now as it was before. No, Cuba will be now as Ecuador, Bolivia, Venezuela, Brazil, Argentina are doing. They welcome foreign investors, but in their terms. They are not selling their countries. We will not do. If we didn't do when we were alone, when we were isolated, why on earth should we even consider that possibility now? We have to be crazy. Then the influence in the cultural influence, I think, is a very important issue here and elsewhere. But I would not give a nationality to that phenomenon. I think that we have to try to improve and increase the cultural level of our population, to promote the best of literature, of music, and so on, without ignoring the right of people to buy low quality products, to prefer low level music. Well, you have to fight against that. Our intellectuals and artists are constantly talking about that. Yes, but not by prohibiting, not by forbidding the people to listen to cheap music, or to say the least. You cannot do that. And you should not do that because nobody had succeeded in controlling the way people would treat. What you should do is to improve their education, to have them better prepared to assimilate the best of every quarter, and to be able to choose properly writing. But that's a universal problem. That's not a problem for the Cubans, I think. That's a problem for everybody, everywhere. Creo que ya
está en general todo relacionado.
Tipo, ese bloqueo
y el tsunami.
Ah, what Cuba would need most.
Que necesitaríamos se levante el bloqueo.
Well, I think that I am not really prepared to give a proper answer to that. I imagine that, there is an area which is very, very important, although not so important economically speaking, in terms of healthcare. We have a very good system, we are very proud of our healthcare system, but you have, I don't like your system, if there is any, but you have the most advanced, you are the most advanced probably in terms of medical technology, and there are some equipment that only are American made, or some products that are exclusively American made. That may affect a small percentage of our population to have or not to have access to that technology or to that product, but for us it's very important because that we can sell also a lot of things to the benefit of American people. For example, I don't know how is exactly the situation now, but I know that a long negotiation is going on or has been going on about the possibility of certain Cuban medical products to be tested first and approved and then introduced in the American market. For example, there is the
Everprot C,
yeah. Which is
For the diabetes fit.
To avoid amputations in diabetic patients.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That product is available in I think more than 20 countries, but not in the U.S. In those countries, they think, well, Cuba has practically solved that problem to a larger extent many years ago, and we had succeeded in introducing that product in certain European countries, but an American diabetic cannot have it because it is not permitted in the U.S. market. It may not be millions of Americans, but for that particular person who needs that product, it's 100%. There or here. But that's an example. And I think that perhaps in other areas of high tech, where you are number one, certainly, that could be but priorities, maybe the people involved in the America, in the economic sector could give a more proper answer.
Yeah.
Apropos of that, there's a question of why are so few Cubans connected to the internet, and what part of that has to do with government restricting their free speech?